told him that.
Love Talk Radio.
KTHOMPSONLIVE.com network, KTHOMPSONLIVE, blogtalkradio.com, /KTHOMPSONLIVE. My name is Eric Payne. I am what's traditionally known as the Sun, and you are?
I am Kay Thompson, and I am the host of the show with my son, Eric Payne. How are you?
I'm all right.
You know, also, Wayne DeCoven is going to be calling in later, and we may be hearing from,
a number of people today. We'll be talking to a number of people about the various topics going on. We have things happening in the news today. You wanted to talk about a few things, Ray Ma?
Yeah, because I lost my page here, but Wayne Dillon is going to be calling you, and maybe now we'll look. I'm looking at these notes, and you know what's in here? The going hot story right now is breaking news in books earlier today. I think that Obama had gotten a great deal of approval about the Iran deal. And so we're thinking about if he's getting the majority of the approval about Iran, then why are people attacking the president? Racial facts, racial problems, of course. And the demonstrations are growing, and the anger, they belong to the, probably in part to the Black Lives Matter movement. It's growing, and it's going to involve a lot more people, I understand, from the information we've been getting. And probably that's the way it should happen because of the vast numbers of incarceration of African-Americans and some whites and Latinos, but mainly African-American male. And it seems that a lot of the people who are perpetrating these shootings of African-American male are maybe arrested, but they just seem to be let out. And, you know, it's just a really messed up situation. Also, driving while black. All right, well, you have to remember this story of a young lady who cops said hung herself. She was going on her way to a job at one of the colleges, and of course, some crazed cop, you know, stopped her, and she ended up so cold hanging herself, you know, and that was earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be keeping people informed about these different programs as much as we can. Eric Garner was stopped, and lo and behold, he was murdered by, are you ready for this, some NYPD people, okay? We're going to be hearing more about that. I remember, you know, so many different instances of, you know, prejudice and just racial outlier prejudice that people just couldn't deal with the fact that there are more people than white people in this country. And, of course, a lot of people know that. Even the people that know it, the more intelligent people, I should say, they don't even know how to speak out again because it seems to be growing. And then we have this case of a person who is, you know, you don't know what angle, what area that he's coming from with his talk. He can pass everybody. And, of course, that's Donald Trump. Okay, so, wow. Well, another thing I have to say is I've been watching a lot of tennis. I'm, you know, very involved with tennis and have been, and we used to go to the South Orange Tennis Club, although I think we're just about the only family that had integrated it at the same time. And so what we're going to be doing is seeing a lot more people, you know, involved with the tennis. And this is the fact it's open now. The Serena Venus is still there. U.S. Open, Nadal, Rafael Nadal, wonderful player. Michael Young, young black player. Gael Monfils, black Frenchman. And then, of course, Federer and Kyrgios. I don't know where he's from. And then Tsonga. And the person who really started a lot of this, you know, with black tennis is in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and his name is Bernie Davis. Bernie Davis is in his 90s, and he is not showing well these days, or he would have been on the show. So that's what I have there. Right now I'm going to talk a little bit about Fareeza Zakaria's show on Sunday, you know, how he was talking about, you know, racial diversity being approved of in different countries. Nobody has heard about that.
Yeah, I want to be If you could go back a little bit, talk about some of the other kind of topics that you brought up. Like we were talking today about this the new breaking news that President Obama's Iran deal is probably going to be approved. It won't get voted down, in other words. So basically he's winning, but it is interesting how the other side lines up, you know, Dick Cheney and his daughter, since I guess he doesn't have a son, so his daughter is the one who's going to try and carry on his legacy of misinformation and deceit and evil, or general overall evilness. So, of course, they were out talking about how bad the Obama deal was and this and that. And I didn't even watch the show because I don't often watch Morning Joe. Sometimes I do. But happened to see a clip where he said he wouldn't do anything different. And Joe Scarborough asked if he would do something different with the Iraq war, and he wouldn't do anything different. So we know that this guy is a liar at best. He's a war criminal, I think. He still to this day insists that he wouldn't do anything differently. And what's been proven is that it was a mistake, and we went to war with Iraq based on a lie. But of course, you know, if you keep wanting to perpetuate the lie, you'll continue to act like you never lied in the first place. So that's Dick Cheney's mission. That'll be his lasting legacy. And it's interesting, you know, they have all these bad things to say about President Obama, but he's the one who got Osama bin Laden. After George Bush at one press conference said, you know, about a year and a half after 9/11, people asked him about, you know, hunting down Osama bin Laden, and he said something to the effect that he didn't really think about it that much. They just want to make sure America's safe or this and that. And just that whole, how these people rewrite history every single day. They wake up and there's a new thing that they want to try and sell to the American public every single day. And so George Bush wasn't concerned about getting Osama bin Laden, and he had the American public thinking that we need to get him, and everything is this guy is the most evil, number one enemy of America. And these guys are acting like it wasn't that important to get him anymore. So when the black guy gets elected president and gets him, they still don't want to give him his props and the appropriate kudos for making a good decision. So we know that since President Barack Obama's been elected, and there's a certain group of people, there's people who are just not going to ever accept him as president, much less any of his accomplishments. And Dick Cheney and all of his like are all in that category. And as we talk further about the presidential race, you know, you've got Donald Trump. He's just smacking all of the competition up and down and around, and also just says whatever he wants to say. It's funny that he says whatever he wants to say and says a lot of stuff that people are thinking, you know, even kind of wise guy, I guess you could say ass a little bit on your show. Even kind of wise-ass stuff he says, you know, like Rick Perry, he puts glasses on so he thinks he's smart. You know, he says that kind of wise-ass stuff. And that makes people laugh, but that's what people are thinking. And also, he says the impolitically correct things about, you know, America's going down, let's make America great, inferring that America's not great now, since obviously all these immigrant people are coming in, inferring that people of Hispanic descent, particularly Mexicans, are, you know, a lot of them are racist, rapists, and murderers. So, and playing to that feeling that a lot of white people, white men in particular, have, that they're not in control, or that this is not a country that gives them preferential treatment anymore. Those white men that have always needed that. You know, I'm not saying they all do, but Donald Trump taps into that. That's why you have certain white supremacist groups that are supporting Donald Trump. That's why you had the guys beat up the Hispanic guy in Boston. Said that Donald Trump was right about these immigrants. And it really is that everybody here is an immigrant. All the Europeans that came here are immigrants. But still and yet, it's interesting how they want to tell somebody else to get out of their country. And the fact that they threw Jorge Ramos, I think it was, out of his press conference. And I think that they said that on the Jose Ribalta show, or whatever the guy's name is on MSNBC, said that, and some other people said that Jorge Ramos, to the Hispanic community on Telemundo, is considered the most trusted human being.
Yes.
And Donald Trump, I guess he'd say he's suing Univision, but just to deal with him with such contempt and sit down and go back to Univision and this and that, And it's just really disrespectful of people. And I'm just wondering when somebody else is going to give it to them back, right back at them. I mean, this guy says, we're not going to, I literally heard him say, we're not going to put out a program today because we're still thinking about the taxes. And he said the same sentence backwards or forwards and said around again three times, and that was the entirety of his statement. And the reporter never said, you just said the same thing, backwards and forwards, and we're not going to put a statement out now. We're going to put a statement out later. We're still looking into the possibilities of now. The statement is, you guys talk in circles, and nobody challenges him on this. And that's kind of the ridiculous part of the ridiculousness of this sideshow, is that some of the stuff he says is funny, some of the stuff he says people want to say, some of the stuff he says people want to say when they want to be wise asses, or some people want to be somewhat racist, and some of the stuff is just plumb disrespectful. But I'm wondering when the other people are going to give it back to him. Because if you listen to him, he's full of it. He's just making a mockery of the process. And what he wants to do is clear that he's an egomaniac. He's narcissistic. He talks about, I can build America, make America great again, you know, because I have the number one TV show, and I'll go off into that. It's like, who wants to hear that every time someone talks about how great they are every 5 minutes? There's no way that a man who's used to being the boss, the CEO, a rich man, can work with other people. Very, very few or very rarely can they work with other people. And a guy that's used to having his way is not going to be able to be president because of the way he comes off, you know? So that's what I have to say about this particular Republican side.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. Eric, you know what thing I was listening on Sunday during the tennis matches, mainly to Fareed Zahari on Sunday morning, and he was talking about foreign policy issues. And he was saying that, I think he was saying that Singapore managed diversity, you know, in their country. Now, these are different countries that, you know, have certain foreign policy, you know, in place, and they adhere to them. They don't seem to have, they have schools that are less diverse, okay? But only because of the fact that, he says that they say, the other big countries say that the United States schools are less diverse because the United States schools in the United States of America have a fear of black and white relationships. That's really, it's been going on since, you know.
Who said that?
She was quoting, you know, some of the countries, you know, on his show.
Who was quoting? I'm sorry.
Fareed Zakari. Okay. You know, I can listen to him practically every Sunday. He's
right.
Great. The black and white students, you know, many of those countries are diverse countries. And, they want to have diversity and economic diversity. And they've had racial problems, however. Especially, I think, if you're mentioning something about Singapore, that Singapore had mandated racial diversity, rather. And he said it around the world, and he's quoting different people, different journalists himself, different people around the world feel less safe. They think international order, you know, and that the number of Obama is more popular around the world, more so than, you know, the United States. And according to the United States Foreign Policy Advisor, who was working on strategic restraints in the Middle East, he said that the Middle East, and then I didn't get that last part because I was watching tennis. I was watching Nishikori beat Wawrinka. And then the show came on American foreign policy, so I had to leave it for a minute. And anyway, so that's my take on it. By the way, there's a new case, you know, with somebody being killed in San Antonio. I just heard it on radio a while ago. So, there we have it.
You're talking about the new shooting. There's a couple of new shootings.
Yeah.
The one about the Texas sheriff, gunned down, was ambushed by the guy down there for whatever reason, and they're trying to figure out whether it was, you know, the race thing, black didn't get shot or whatever, since it happened to be a black guy who shot him down in cold blood. Then they had the other two, there's a white guy who shot a deputy somewhere about a week before that, he was just a criminal with a shotgun. And most recently today, there was a police officer that was killed by two white guys and a black guy.
So they had a tape down that on the air. I saw it. You know, they were saying that the guy, you know, drew a gun on them.
Yeah, that would be
that
would be something different than I'm talking about. What I'm talking about now is a police officer that was saw three suspicious individuals in his area, and he was following them, called for backup. When the backup got there, he was dead.
Yeah.
And he was down with the sick. What you're talking about is a gentleman that was shot with his hands. They have a tape. The tape you're talking about, where you can't, at least what I saw in the news, that you can't see his other arm. You can't see if his other arm was also high in the air. The police claimed that he had something in his hand, and he was shot. So I don't know.
I saw the one that they hit behind in the air. There was nothing in the
tape. So you saw the second tape that had yet to be released, as per this morning.
And I think that they said that he was blacking out in the not that that makes any big difference, the person's a person, a life is a life. But, you know, it's really something terrible when you think about, you know, the amount of going back to jail or incarcerated people, going back to them and trying to find out what in the world is going on. Because if you look at the figures and you look at the people talking about incarceration, there are tons and tons and tons of African-American males serving sentences they shouldn't be serving. They shouldn't even be on or in jail for the kind of crimes that supposedly the majority of them commit. As opposed to those people who are white, and I hate to take the voices making a story, you know, not making a story, but reporting on a story that has to do with black and white, you know, relationships. You know, that's really, really very sad because there's so many things we have to, you know, watch out for. For instance, there are a lot of illnesses going on that a lot of people are being, you know, subjected to. Like I just said, talk about people getting well and taking medicines and finding out what the new thing is in the medical world. But yet we still have to deal with, you know, the problems of between races, the problems between people whose color is different. I interviewed a lot of people in the black and Latino community. They know about Dr. Yusuf Ben Yekinen. They know about Dr. Van Soderer, about John Henry Clark, about, W.D. Boys. And they were all talking about the beginning of the man. And they maintain, and this is because of the analysis and history that the Leakeys had, and they were anthropologists and people who went to find out where man came from. And lo and behold, they came from the decision that man was the oldest fossil of a human being was found in West Africa, older by doors in West Africa. And the oldest fossil was a woman. So does that give you some information? If not, we need to go back and read the books I was telling you about them. Van Soderer, They Came Before America. Dr. Yosef Ben Yekinen's books, so many books they have, and Dr. Clark, and Dr. Len Gunther. And that, I have it. So we're waiting now to hear from Wayne Gilman.
Well, anyway, let's get back to some of the other subjects. I don't know if Wayne tried to call in, but someone I wanted to talk about. We had last week was the anniversary, the 10th year anniversary of Katrina, Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, and it was just interesting. You know, the president went down and he had a listen to the. He went down and made a presentation, things like that. Then George W. Bush went down. It was just interesting. I didn't watch his whole thing, George W. Bush. He looked very uncomfortable.
Yes.
He looked like a criminal returning to the scene of a crime, that's how he struck me. And as he was walking through the audience, talking to people and trying to, shake some people's hands, you could see a lot of people weren't really that enthusiastic about shaking his hand and having a picture taken with him. They could, take him or leave him. And it's just ironic to me that, I don't know. How can you I guess they've have a foundation trying to help the victims of Katrina, but I don't know. You come back and he looks real uncomfortable today. He looked when they were on the stage up there and he was getting ready to speak. Even his speech, he looked real, real uncomfortable. Like he felt responsible. And if you get a chance, watch any kind of footage of that because he looks real uncomfortable. Like he's responsible for what happened. And, of course, he's not responsible for a natural disaster, but he sure is responsible for letting people hang and swim in water for a work week. So, it's just really kind of unbelievable how, you know, if you let these people, and if you don't remember, if you don't maintain your knowledge about history and about life, they will rewrite history. They will lie and make things up and have you believing things happened that never happened. And that is the case now in history, if you really know the truth about certain historical events. So you really got to, you know, and there's times where the media falls in line to project and promote a certain narrative and a storyline that they want the country to focus on, as opposed to the real problems sometimes. So you really got to pay attention and know your history, because these people out here will lie and will make up stories about themselves and make up a history.
In general, it comes to a long time. They make up stories to match their wallet. Yeah, I'm not saying that about Bush or anything. But I get the impression that George Bush, you know George? George Bush.
George W. Bush. One of the sons. The most recent president running for president.
Now, I got the impression that he really does not want to run.
I'm talking about Jeb Bush.
Talking about the Bush that's running for president right now.
Right,
yes.
Jeb.
Okay. Now, I got the impression that he really doesn't. He seems to be very uncomfortable. You know, I think he started to be less uncomfortable when Trump started bashing him, and then he got angry. And then he was trying to make up his, not make up stuff, but make it up to himself and to the people that, yes, he does have a background. Yes, he does have a problem, maybe, that he's trying to work out. But I just got that impression. I still have the impression that he's there, not because he really wants it. You know, I was telling somebody about this movie a long time ago about the president or of his company or the president of a state or something that had the same kind of background. They were oil men. And then one of them was the head of something or other that was a very important position. It could have been president or governor of a Texas state. And, of course, they, you know, a lot of oil. They were oil people. And one of them had married a Mexican woman. And that she had tried to go to the, she needed to have her hair done. So she went to the beauty parlor in that particular hotel where they were staying at the time, because they said to her, on the trail of the politicians, but they wouldn't let her in. They would not do her hair. So I relate back to that because it was such correlation, and I never forgot that. But anyway, yes. But anyway, this is getting to be really funny. I think that, I don't know if Trump is really serious, but I'll tell you one thing, he sure is fun.
Good.
But I don't want a funny person for the president. I want somebody who's really serious and knows the problems and wants to deal with all people equally. And right now, if you see what the police are doing, you hate to say it every single time, but the point is, it's not equal. Incarceration is big. If you check it out, the various figures of the different jails around the country, you would be in shock, absolute shock.
Yeah, what I was going to say about Jeb Bush, I don't pick up that he doesn't want to run. What I perceive from him is that he's frustrated with all of the stuff that he has to put up with, the kind of the questions about Donald Trump, the direction that Donald Trump is taking the race, and just all the stuff that he's messing with Jeb Bush. In fact, Jeb Bush is clearly, he seems to be mad a little bit upset that he's got to answer these questions and go through this process, and that seems to be his energy, and that's kind of crazy. But I certainly don't think we need someone who has the same ideology as the person that was there before this current occupant of the White House, the person who, you know, if you look at the last two Bush presidencies, George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, each time one of these individuals, these men have left office, there's been a deficit. When Bill Clinton came in after he beat Big George, he came in, got the books. At the end of the Clinton years, we had a surplus. George W. Bush comes in, came in, ran for president, questionably got elected or appointed, came in. After his 8 years, we have a deficit. Obama's in now. There's economic growth. There's all these things that happened started to turn this trend around. So there seems to be a problem. Every time we get somebody named Bush in office, you can best believe that America at the end of those years is going to have a deficit in the budget. That seems to be something that's so very important to Republicans, the deficit. They always talk about the deficit, keeping spending down, but after every time one of them has, well, a Republican has been in office, and in this time, the last two times it's been someone named Bush, there's been a huge deficit. So why do we want to fall for these policies again with this guy who wants to call him, everybody refers to me as Jeb. Why? Because we don't want to say your last name, because not another Bush, not another Bush. Dynasties are a problem in American politics and in the United States, period.
Well, let's talk about Carson. This is never stepped on us. And I haven't even heard him speak. I mean, everybody else has been covered and everybody else has been talked about, you know, a lot. But I haven't heard that much or next to nothing about Carson.
Well, ironically, he's tied with, and so at least one poll tied with Donald Trump in Iowa, in the Iowa polls. So, you know, Ben Carson, I haven't really heard. I've heard him speak a little bit here and there, but I turn him off, you know, because he starts going in a direction that is very Republican and very kind of seems to be anti the interest group that he's from. And I understand that you want to represent everybody, but you don't want to represent everybody to the point where you're not being representative of your people. And Ben Carson and a lot of these people that are close to black Republicans, I think, and hoping that their party can change, you're still supporting a party that promotes a certain set of value systems.
Mm.
And a lot of times those value systems hurt black people as a whole.
Mm.
And so while we think of ourselves as individual, well, I'm not going to be that person, that statistic. I'm going to rise above it. And a lot of us middle-class black people and people that might not be economically middle-class that have that mentality too, that want to work hard and achieve, but we understand the particulars in the history of the United States and what it's done and how it's led black, how it has landed black people in the position that we find ourselves in this society today. And if you don't take into account all of those issues and all of those points that lead up to that, then I suppose you can be a member of a political group that seemingly seems like it, at the very least, is not concerned about the priorities of the ethnic group from which you come.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are comfortable with that, then there's a problem. And when you're comfortable with that, then me being from the same ethnic group that you come from, Ben Carson, you don't seem like you're really for us, I can't support you. So that's why my long explanation why I usually turn him off when I'm trying to hear him speak, because he goes down that road.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's just ironic that we have all of these. I mean, they're all willing to say the most extreme things. You know, you got Mike Huckabee, you got saying that Obama's marching Israelis to the authority oven. And, I mean, it's just good. These people are crazy. They say whatever comes to mind to denigrate the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no decorum, no limits. There's no line that they would not cross, which is really kind of unbelievable. I like the fact that Hillary's giving them a little bit, you know, talking about, you know, yeah, the terrorists don't want to let women have their rights too. You know, and they got a little upset saying she's comparing them to terrorists. But, hey, they say the same thing, and, you know, they'll get over it. But it's just, you know.
I think everybody needs a new line or a new way of talking to people. Mm-hmm. You know, about different other problems other than political.
Right.
Although I know that's really, really impossible, because everything that you said can't be, you know, put in the category of politics and political. If you have this group versus that group, versus this and that, and so forth and so on. So, you know, it's really, really.
No, I wanted to say about the shooting in Texas, the particular sheriff who was ambushed by the African American guy, and when the sheriff, the captain, or the chief of that police force down there said, you know, he made a statement about it's not. Why can't it be all lives matter instead of just black lives this way? And we understand, you know, and cops lives matter. And then and those lives do matter. All lives do matter. And cops lives certainly matter. But, you know, and people are passionate about that. Nobody believes that people who are sworn to uphold the law and do the job that they're sworn to do believe that no one feels they should be gunned down. We all think that's a crime. But I think that once they start, this is what happens, how they diffuse an argument that we might have. You know, someone wants to say, well, all lives matter. Well, that's never been the question. All lives have been mattering. But you say all lives matter, but it has seemed like only white lives have mattered. And it seemed like that black lives weren't important. So that's and seeming that different black person was getting killed every week, that's why we had to coin the phrase Black Lives Matter. And so when you have an individual speaking about a tragedy, which it was with this sheriff getting gunned down, right, and then the sheriff wants to say, well, why can't we say all lives matter? All lives do matter. But and let's not try to split the hairs in terms of the support you could get, because people do support and believe that all lives do matter, that a sheriff, that law enforcement officers should be respected and obeyed, those that are doing their job and not oppressing people. But the fact remains that black people have been killed in this country at the hands of police officers. So that's why we say Black Lives Matter. They're two separate subjects. So I would humbly suggest to that sheriff that, you know, we're all on the side of making sure that people don't think it's open season on law enforcement, but don't get that issue confused with the fact that black people are tired of being killed in this country for 400 years. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, and you know, when you think of, I've often said that I was going to do a show on when you were interested, or not really interested, men are going to be talking to women. I'm also going to be talking to women. When was the first time that you felt in your lifetime that you, what made you different? Who said something to you to make you feel different? Was it something you wore? Was it something you said? Was it some way you laughed? Was it some way that you think? Was it some way that you wrote? Was it the way you speak? So when was it that you felt different from some incident in your young life? Well, I can tell you about mine, okay? growing up in New Jersey, I felt a little different. Different. At the time that we went to nursing school, and my mother was a nursing school teacher, and some of the people in there would not send their children to that nursing school because it was mainly in a black area. And I think that was the very first time. And then as time went on, of course, there were different little incidents that happened, but talking about organizations now, and at a very young age, the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts were the Boy Scouts of America, and they were all white. The Girl Scouts of America, and they were all white. And then my mom and a friend of hers decided that enough of this. You know, we're going to be doing the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, rather. And we went to join the Girl Scouts. And they had a big meeting one day to introduce the new members and so forth. And when we stood up, and my mother was a Girl Scout leader, so she and her friend stood up. And the girls turned around, and one of them said, oh, black girls. And there was another time that I felt different. Well, mother made it her business, and mother made it her business for us not to feel different, to the point where I feel very superior. And there are so many different things. For instance, in playing tennis, we used to play a lot of tennis. And the person that I was going to have on the air, who's ill now, this is Bernie Davis. Bernie Elizabeth. I remember that he had gotten so angry about not being able to get into a white tennis club that he built his own tennis club on a lot. And he made it into a tennis court, right. And that's where I learned how to play. And love learned how to play. She was playing and she was helping us learn. And so that's how I became interested in tennis. And then we never, you know, when we were growing up in New Jersey, I'm not going to say where, we went to a tennis court. And Yannick Noah was playing at that particular time. And this was in Austin, playing right now in South Orange.
Okay.
South Orange, I'm telling it. The South Orange tennis court.
It's not where you're growing up.
It was when I was growing up, and you guys were right. Right. And Yannicka was playing, and a few people listening to this know exactly what I'm talking about. One of my good buddies that I used to play dance with all the time. Hi, Sonny. Anyway, so we went to see. I had the girls dressed in all yellow, and I was dressed in yellow. And Eric, you had on these little pants, and they were blue and white, and you were very neat. And I think you had a white pants because you also played tennis. And then I remember we walked in because we were just a little bit late. No, it wasn't planned, but maybe it was, you know. But anyway, as we were going into our seats, the very good seats, I might add, people were saying, ah, look at that fashion. Never forgot that. But never forgot that. We did have to step on stage, and that was in South Orange, New Jersey. So, South Orange. Yes, I'm still on. Yeah, a lot more stuff there. But anyway, and then we're going to dancing school. There was not in dancing school in the state of New Jersey that was black owned and operated. So my sister and I decided that we were going to start our own dancing school. And we did it. When the Thompson Dance Studio was located in New York, New Jersey. And that was the fact that there wasn't another black dancing studio for kids to take dance lessons in. So we had the first. And Sister Houston brought Whitney there for a while. Let me see, Sarah Vaughan brought Debbie there for a while. Her name's not another name, but anyway. And so we had that studio for quite a while. And so that's why I have a very strong feeling about black and white, and that this is so old, so stupid, so effing stupid. You know, I mean, for there to still be this vision or this, how can I say this, the separation between black and white. Okay, you can't even figure it out. You're all human beings. Okay?
and the other kind of news, the U.S. Open, the Open is starting this week, right? So I know it was the second round today. I was watching a little bit of Serena playing somebody a couple hours ago. I don't know if she won. I assume she probably won. But you're going tomorrow night to the U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you've been going. You guys have been going. We've been going for a long time. I remember I went once. Well, our whole family went maybe once or twice. And then you guys have continued. You and my sisters have continued to go to the U.S. Open, right?
Yeah.
And
I haven't been in about 3 years, though.
Okay.
So it's going to be, recap of the whole thing. And, yes, we're going.
And elaborate on the experience of going to the U.S. Open?
Oh, when we used to go to the Open, this is a long time ago when we were playing, tournament tennis. Of course, tennis tour weren't that big, but they were up in the New York group and East Orange group playing that. You know, New Jersey, so forth and so on. So, but that was when we went to the tennis club in South Orange. That we were playing tennis at that time, my sister and I. And believe me, I was crazy about tennis as I was crazy about dance.
Okay.
And you knew that I had about 6 or 7 rackets.
Right, and the experience stopped being at the U.S. Open.
That's right, when you go to the U.S. Open. When we first went, I just remember seeing Arthur Ashe. You see, McEnroe had just, beaten Arthur Ashe, if I'm not mistaken, Joe McEnroe, I think.
I don't.
Yes, it was. I was there. And if I am wrong, I'll admit it next week. But Arthur Ashe, the time he lost, and he was at the top of his game to this young black, white guy. And believe me, Ashe had a problem when they didn't want him on the court. At all. So then he became the president, the top player, in the country. And, of course, David Dickinson there, because it's the Arthur Ashe Stadium over there.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Rangel, you really find him there, at Pennyworth. In fact, I got a chance to interview Venus and, Serena, when they weren't very young at that particular point. They had been around for a little while. But I do remember when we first heard about them, they were wearing the beads in their hair. And they were beating everyone in California. I think it was California. Yeah, they came out on that court with these down their hair and beat the devil out of everybody. And believe me, everybody started getting beat. And but the same really court, they went through hell with the different tennis, so-called tennis reporters. They gave them hell. They were so nasty. And so that's why a lot of us, you know, who were black journalists and, you know, talk show people, which I was, and not only on channel, on New Jersey Network television, and also Canal Plus in New Jersey, Channel 47, you know, on there.
The experiences that you had.
Yeah, in broadcasting. Well, LIBBOS. So, anyway, tennis is big.
If we can just, I don't mean to interrupt, Ma. Our screen was frozen here for a while. That's why you've been on hold all this time, our other co-host, Wayne Gilman. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still hanging in here, man. I was wondering what was going on.
Our screen was frozen. I had to actually reboot the screen because I knew that you were probably trying to call in. But, Wayne, you've been listening to our conversation, I suppose. So what do you think about, first, we're on the U.S. Open. What do you think about the Open and what it means historically? And, yeah, being a New Yorker yourself, give us your unique perspective.
Well, the thing is, I'm not one really to follow a lot of tennis, and I should. I had family over today. We were watching Serena, which wasn't one of her best performances, but, you know, she did very well in the end. She manages, she reminds me very much like the New York Yankee pitcher C.C. Sabathia. He may throw a few balls the first two innings, but by the time he gets warmed up and get going, forget about it. You can't touch that girl. No one can come close to Serena when it comes to playing tennis. So, and then I was just reminiscing along with Kay about, you know, Arthur Ashe and how we met him years ago. And I happened to see David Dinkins and Al Roker on TV last night. They were at the event yesterday. But it's a phenomenal sport, and it's something that many young people of color, particularly now that we have somebody who someone of color actually representing the sports industry in that area that based in Washington, I find that there are a lot of programs that are sprouting up to get people involved, young women particularly involved in tennis, which is a good thing. You know, because educationally now, a lot of these districts, regardless of where you are in the country, they all seem to cry broke, yet some districts do better than others. Some people have computers. Some people are begging for computers. You know the drill because I know from just based on what it is that you've been exposed to, Eric, you know, and your visibility to people in Congress and things of that sort. You understand what goes on out here, but the average person trying to get a handle on why some districts are better than others, you know, when everything should be based on uniformity, it's a completely different world. It's unfortunate, but that's just how it is. With respect to the whole political contest, I think you said it all when it came down to that CBS interview that Dick Cheney appeared on. You know, I had heard your comments earlier. There is something clearly wrong with that man. And anyone who basically upheld, I mean, short of his daughter, I can understand the familial emotional ties with that. But beyond that, you know, the entire Bush administration, you know, I'm really worried about what happens after this. You made it a point about how Barack Obama frequently goes to a lot of criticism. But let me tell you something. When history looks back at his 8 years as president, I don't think there's anyone who will come close in terms of the intellectual property, what we have been exposed to, the elevation of the conversation on an intellectual level when you juxtapose George W. Bush segueing into a Barack Obama. And I was down in D.C. 2 weekends ago. A friend of mine's son, who I watched grow up, and he's a corporate attorney, he's on the short list to become chairman of the SEC. He may not get it, but he's at least been nominated, and he went in for his interview. you know, he was able to tell me that there are a lot of problems that Barack not only faces from, you know, the people from the Republican Party, but there are quite a few Democrats that see the jealousy. And he also cited some members of the Black Congressional Caucus have issues with Barack because he's his own man. He doesn't, you know, basically play in the same lane as traditionally other Democrats have played in. But, you know, right or wrong, I mean, I just think this man has just done a brilliant job. I don't like the idea that I got to come out of my pocket once a month and pay an umpteen amount of money in health care. You know, I'm the first to cry about that. I know other people who are spending more. But there are a lot of people who never had that before who are benefiting from it now. And I also know the Republican Party had a problem because they don't like the idea that the Democrats got this through, you know. So
yeah,
I'm nervous what's going to happen in the next election.
Yeah. Let me just say a quick sidebar. I have to stand corrected that Arthur Ashe did play with John McEnroe in 1978. I was swearing to my mom, we've been having this ongoing thing since she's been talking about it, that I thought that they were of two different eras, but I stand corrected because John McEnroe is about my age, I believe, and but he I did Google it, and he in fact did play Arthur Ashe. I'm pretty sure it was towards the end of Arthur Ashe's career because if Arthur Ashe was in his prime, he wouldn't. John McEnroe wouldn't be beating him. I would like to know.
McEnroe was dead.
I would like to know how old Arthur Ashe was at the time. I'm sure he was probably in his 40s at the very least, and McEnroe was probably in his 20s.
I think Ashe died in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken, but he was still playing up until the time he had gotten sick, I think.
I
could be wrong. Okay.
Yes, that's what it was. I think I heard that too long ago on television, that it was from a heart operation that he had gotten this, you know, ailment.
Well, he got AIDS.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was from a blood transfusion.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So, yeah, it was.
Right.
And it was so shocking to people that, you know, it was shocking to me. I knew that. Yes, I was there.
But getting back to, I just wanted to take a moment and say I stand corrected. My mom was right about that, so
that
I just had to, take time out. But getting back to the politics, Wayne, the average person that's really paying attention, you know, there's so many different sides of the political thing. People have their own personal interests and their immediate get reelected interests, you know, and then their ambitious interests. You mentioned something about members of the Black community or Black caucus not being as supportive of the president. You know, I've heard people, just general members of the community, we all know about Travis Smiley and Cornel West.
Right.
Obama. But a lot of people say, well, Black people didn't get nothing by Barack Obama, which I don't, you know, you don't really know the workings of government if you think that Black people didn't get anything from a Barack Obama presidency. I mean, you had Eric Holder, who was dialing back a lot of those disparities in sentencing, in prison sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was causing so many Black and Hispanic people to get much longer prison terms than white people. So those were some of the things that a lot of people, rank and file people, don't understand that Barack Obama did that helps Black people. In the end, that really helps Black people. And there are a lot of, and also I know that some members of CBC kind of want to push him further. You know, and I think that might be their issue with him sometimes, that they want to push him a little further to do more things for Black people or maybe to go further, things like that. But, you know, we know that where the most resistance has come from. And it's just ironic that, you know, this man could do all of these things. And my cousin said, you know, he's going to go down, and he said the same thing you said, in history, he's going to go down as being one of the best presidents.
Absolutely.
Oh, no question. I mean, There's been no scandal there, you know, I mean, I can't think of. And, you know, at the end of the day, I just hope that he lives through this last phase without any battle scars. I don't know what his political leanings will be because at one point it just looked like Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee apparent. But, you know, of course, this nonsense with the emails, I mean, sooner or later that's just going to have to get a rest because, mm-hmm. I mean, there was he would, this, we're grasping at straws now. You know, a lot of this stuff was already pointed out that it didn't happen when it was considered official for her to, you know, not use that system when it came to sensitive matters. And, I mean, and none of these journalists are willing to come out and say that, but it was already documented that, you know, way back when that Barack Obama had actually excused of what was being done because there was no penalty involved in terms of her using her personal using the emails, you know, for personal use and stuff like that until it became a sensitive subject. But the Republicans are trying to take this now for a touchdown,
yep.
just to have something to say, and that's it. I like Joe Biden. I think he could be a pit bull. You know, I just don't understand what's behind that. You know, I really don't understand. I don't know if it's some dying wish of his son for him to run again. You know, we can't afford to turn around and just hand this, you know, last 8 years back to the Republican camp, in my opinion. You know, and as for Donald Trump, that's a joke. You know,
that's very true. That's very true. We, I mean, you know, I think that in the long run, the fact that Hillary Clinton is going to have some competition will make her a better candidate, really. So it doesn't seem like she's just being anointed. Although you they've been trying to, you know, for a minute it was Benghazi that Daryl Issa was trying to have hearings on every day about, you know, just to say he was having a hearing on, you know, and not have anything. That was the whole thing about how they busted ISIS, because he just wanted to have hearings and make people look better. So he keeps calling hearings, but there's nothing to have a hearing about, you know?
Exactly.
So they just want to create the facade of something being wrong, of some impropriety. And, you know, people want to create the image, the impression. You know, when you, I mean, nowadays it's about perception. You know, they create the perception that there's scandal always with the Clinton's name. And, you know, let's be honest, they don't really help themselves too much sometimes. But if you create that impression and you build upon it, then of course, you know, people are going to buy into it. And that's what, you know, some of these folks are willing to do regardless. They're not willing to govern, not willing to do things that are going to be better for the American people. They want to make people look bad. Okay, now my mom wants to get to something before these last 7 minutes of the show, Wayne.
That's right.
And she's going
to
say.
And you're going to get whatever I want to say. Now, Wayne, listen, I need you to listen carefully because Sherry Shepherd is having another cooking show. It's Sherry Shepherd and Holy and Hungry. And Vonda, another Vonda downtown New York, in a new restaurant. Vonda Shepherd is on. And it's at 10 p.m. tonight. Saturday at 4 p.m. And the big thing that I want to announce is that I was there during the time that they were taping it, and I have about two sentences to say. And I have a black I'm not a black top, a blue and one, a white top. So that's Sherry Shepherd and Holy and Hungry. That's the name of the show.
Holy and Hungry. Sherry Shepherd is the host.
Right.
It's going to be, it's done from Vonda's Kitchen, Vonda McPherson, Vonda's Kitchen. And they
downtown
went in downtown New York, and they highlighted, well, the show is it highlights, I assume, some good, nice restaurants that are soul food, I guess, or whatever.
No, Sherry's cooking and Vonda's cooking, but Sherry's mainly, I think there was a special dish I don't remember. But I'll tell you one thing, it was darn good, and I'm on for about two sentences. And it's on demand, by the way. People can
get that on demand. Okay, let's slow down. What channel is it going to be on?
The cooking show.
Okay, so we don't know the channel. Probably
it's on demand. Sherry Shepherd and Holy and Hungry.
Okay, but there's probably a channel that is going to be on as well. We'll get that back to you. And you can probably search in your on demand the cooking show, but we will try to get back to you to give you to narrow it down for you a little bit. Maybe the cooking channel, maybe not. But
that's right. And there's, and by the way, there are 7 million people who tuned in for this show's food work. And I say, and what I say is, well, on endurance, by endurance her food, but I don't cook. I can't cook. I don't like to cook, and I'm not going to cook. But her cooking is darn good.
Wanda.
And that's how Sherry Shepherd says she's joyful and holy and hungry.
Holy and hungry is the name of the show.
And who can cook? Mother. Mother could cook. Matricia, my sister, could cook. Can you cook, Beth?
No.
Lisa can cook. Gina can cook.
Okay.
I can't cook.
I got to see that.
Tracy can cook. Tracy can cook.
Happy birthday,
Luca.
Happy birthday,
Luca. Right. I don't believe in it. I don't believe in cooking. When I can go and have it cooked.
So we have another 4 minutes. Wayne, do you have a subject that you'd like to talk on? I'd like to get your assessment about Donald Trump. Since you are a New Yorker.
Well, I don't even want to give this guy any more promotion than he gets. You know, I just think it's sad that the poll numbers seem to show that he's, you know, riding the crest of success. But I think, you know, after a while, this is going to just die a respectful death, even if he were to run as an independent. You know, even Ben Carson, the evangelical surgeon of note, you know, his numbers are beginning to catch up, and I think in one poll surpass Trump. So, you know, it's like entertainment watching him. And I just the thing, if I were Donald, I would be looking over my shoulder. You know, he has offended so many Latino Americans and Latinos at large that, you know, I wouldn't be in the least bit surprised somebody tries to take a crack at putting him in his place the wrong way, you know?
I hope the people who are listening to Chalamondo really, you know, get it straight. You know, you have to endorse and support your people, okay?
Right.
Chalamondo, I used to work with Chalamondo. That's great, but I can't see them going for Trump.
The thing is, they've already put him in his place more than one time. But, you know, all it takes is just one. You know, I mean, we're living in such volatile times now. Anything is possible. I mean, I see what goes on. I mean, Eric, he had mentioned the myriad of shootings that have been occurring against police officers. And that it's not black on white. It's even white on white now. So, you know, we're just living in troubled times. The genie's out the bottle, and we need to figure out a way to get her back in.
You know, we got like 90 seconds, Wayne, but just real quick, Donald Trump is particularly unique to New York, and I think that people in the New York area have a different perspective about him and know how to take him in a different way than everybody else in the rest of the country. You know, because he's got that New York trash talking thing that we're all used to. You know, Chris Christie has it. That's how we are in these areas. And the rest of the country is so appalled by it. And that's what the rest of the country is so appalled by it, but that's how we are. And his way, it seems to be something that captivates these people in the flyover, so to speak, because they act like they never heard it before. But anyway, we're coming up on about 30 seconds. I guess that'll be a lead into the next week's show, as we continue to talk about the current topics in the presidential race. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're sorry for last week. That was Blog Talk. They had a network problem. Thank you, Wayne Gilman, for holding on so much. We're glad we got to talk to you. Our computer was frozen. Didn't know you were on the air. Thanks for calling in once again, co-hosts.
Okay, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
All right, okay. And I'm Eric Payne, and you are?
Kay Thompson. And we're going to be talking to Bernard Marsh, the author of Great White Way, Great White Lies. That's Broadway. What is this?
Next week. Once again, you can always find the Kay Thompson Live Show here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. All you got to do is just go to blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive to listen to the show live every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m., or the show is archived. So you can listen to it all your little heart desires. All right? Thanks for tuning in once again. We'll see you on the backside, as they say. Who used to say that? Frankie Crocker or somebody like that. All right. Going off. I'm trying to find some music to lead out to you peoples. So you know that we mean business. But we'll just end it here. Everybody, have a good week. Bye-bye now.